Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Okay, imagine this hidden world inside your gut. It's, you know, teeming with life, bacteria, viruses, all battling it out. But what if I told you that one of the most numerous genetic things living inside you right now has basically gone unnoticed for decades? Not a bacteria, not a virus either. Something, well, smaller, more cryptic. We're talking about this tiny, really unassuming piece of DNA, and it's found in almost everyone in industrialized nations. It makes up a pretty significant chunk of the genetic material in your gut, and get this, it even changes its behavior when you're stressed out. So how could something so common yet so overlooked be, you know, influencing our health, our environment, in ways we're just starting to figure out what's the real impact of this invisible guest?
Well, today we're really shining a spotlight on some groundbreaking work. It's by Emily C. Fogarty, Matthew S. Schechter, Karen Lowlands, and a really extensive team of collaborators. People like Amy D. Willis, Lori E. Comstock, and A. Murat Aaron, mostly from the University of Chicago. They've just fundamentally pushed forward our understanding of these, well, cryptic genetic elements that are shaping our gut microbiome. Their insights were published in Cell.
That's quite the intro to something so hidden, right? Now, many listeners know we talk a lot about bacteria and viruses in the gut, the microbiome superstars, you could say. But what about these smaller things, these extra chromosomal genetic elements, pieces of DNA not part of the main chromosome, like plasmids? It feels like they often fly under the radar a bit.
That's exactly right. And plasmids are, well, they're fascinating themselves. So these autonomous bits of DNA, they can replicate all on their own, independently of the host's main chromosome. Many are really well known in microbiology, of course. They carry important traits, things like antibiotic resistance or virulence factors. That's why they get so much attention naturally. They're like these little genetic couriers carrying really important tools, or sometimes dangerous ones.
Right, the ones with obvious jobs. But you use that word cryptic, plasmids. What makes these ones so elusive, so cryptic compared to the famous ones?
Yeah, the cryptic ones. What's truly intriguing about them is just how mysterious they've been. They're usually small, they exist in multiple copies per cell, but crucially, they don't seem to carry any obvious genes that help their host bacterium. No clear benefit. So for a long time, scientists kind of dismissed them, maybe genetic parasites, or even just, you know, junk DNA floating around. And the big challenge was always studying them where they actually live, in their natural habitat. That really limited any insights into what they were really doing ecologically. They were like this background noise we couldn't quite figure out. We knew they were there, but not why.
Okay, so the core problem this deep dive is tackling isn't just that these things were unknown. It's that we had this fundamental blind spot, right? For potentially really widespread genetic players, but with unknown functions in one of our most crucial ecosystems. How did this team finally start to, you know, shine a light on this hidden world, pull back the curtain?
Well, this team really embarked on an incredibly comprehensive, I mean, ambitious journey. They wanted to characterize one specific cryptic plasmid, which they named PBI-143. And it's just a fantastic example of how modern genomics is finally letting us see what was basically there all along.
Finding something so tiny, though, among trillions of microbes in the gut. That sounds like finding a needle in a haystack, doesn't it? How did they even start looking?
Right, it's a scale problem. They started by screening over 2,100 individually assembled human gut metagenomes. And shotgun metagenomics, for anyone unfamiliar, is basically sequencing all the DNA in a sample, like from the gut, without needing to grow the microbes in a lab first. This shotgun approach, it generates these huge data sets. Then you need powerful bioinformatics tools to piece it all back together. And that reveals all the genetic players, even the rare ones, or things we couldn't detect before. So using known PBI-143 sequences as a starting point, this first big sweep led them to find three distinct versions, or flavors, of PBI-143. The main difference was in their replication gene called RePay.
Okay, so they found some initial variants. Did they then zoom out, look more broadly?
Oh, absolutely. That was just the start. From there, they quantified its prevalence across global human populations. Mm. They analyzed over 4,500 publicly available gut metagenomes from 23 different countries. And then to figure out its host range, like which bacteria does it actually live inside, they looked at 717 bacterial isolates specifically from the human gut.
Wow, that's an enormous amount of computational work, mapping its presence across so many people, so many places. But, you know, mapping where it is one thing. understanding what it does, how it behaves in a living system, that's another challenge. How do they go from the computational stuff to actually testing its biology?
Good point. They didn't just stop at the data mining. They did rigorous in vitro experiments too, you know, in the lab. For instance, to check if it could actually jump between bacteria horizontal gene transfer. They engineered it slightly. They inserted a common tetracycline resistance gene into PBI-143. This let them track its transfer experimentally between different species of bacteroidales. That's a really dominant group of bacteria in our gut. And beyond that, they surveyed over 100,000 metagenomes from 88 really diverse environments. I mean, everything. Oceans, yeah. Animal guts, human skin. Trying to precisely pin down its ecological niche.
That is incredibly thorough, looking everywhere. And what about its history, its evolution? How did they track how it might have changed over time?
Yeah, for the evolutionary dynamics, they track something called single nucleotide variants, or SNVs, across thousands of metagenomes. They even included mother-infant pairs, which is key for understanding transmission. SNVs are just tiny changes, like typos at a single letter in the DNA sequence. They act like these little genetic fingerprints that let you trace lineage and relationships. And they even used advanced AI tools to predict the structure of one of its key proteins, MOBA.
AI for protein structure. You mean tools like AlphaFold 2. That's been revolutionizing structural biology, right?
Exactly that. AlphaFold 2 was instrumental here. It let them predict the 3D shape of this MOBA protein just from its gene sequence, which gives really crucial clues about how small genetic changes, those SNVs, might actually alter the protein's function and ultimately the plasmid's role. It was this multi-pronged approach, you know, combining the omics data with lab experiments and these cutting-edge computational models. That was absolutely crucial.
Okay, so they use this really impressive arsenal of techniques, genomic, experimental, computational, to hunt down this elusive plasmid. What did they actually find? What were the big, maybe surprising takeaways?
Well, the most impactful result, and frankly, it's pretty astonishing, is just the sheer prevalence and abundance of this thing, PBI-143. It was detected in a staggering 73% of all the global human gut metagenomes they studied. 73%. But, and here's where it gets really interesting, its distribution wasn't even, not at all. It was super prevalent in industrialized countries, found in up to 92% of people in Japan, 86% in the United States. Yet you look at non-industrialized populations like in Madagascar, and it was rare, like 0.8% prevalence.
Well, hold on, 92% in Japan, less than 1% in Madagascar. That is a massive difference. It really makes you stop and think, doesn't it, about, you know, modern lifestyles, diet, environment. Do they have any ideas why there's such a stark contrast, or is that the next big question?
That's a critical observation, definitely. And yeah, it's a major area for future research. This study didn't nail down the exact reasons for the difference, but it strongly, strongly suggests that factors linked to industrialized living, maybe diet, sanitation, definitely antibiotic use patterns, or even just different exposure routes play a huge role in shaping whether PBI-143 thrives. It's a really powerful signal that our environment is deeply impacting even these tiny elements within our microbiome.
Okay. And when it is present in those industrialized populations, how much of it are we talking about? Is it just a tiny fraction, or is it actually a significant player in the gut's genetic landscape?
Oh, when it's there, it's extremely numerous. Even though it's tiny, only about 2,700 base pairs long, it frequently counted for 0.1% up to 3.5% of all the DNA sequence reads in a sample. Now, to put that in perspective, PBI-143 was, on average, at least 14 times more numerous than crassphage. And crassphage was previously thought to be the most abundant virus or phage in the human gut. So this tiny overlooked plasmid is actually a dominant genetic force.
14 times more numerous than what we thought was the king of gut viruses. Wow. Okay, so this previously invisible element is just massively outcompeting it. What about where it lives? Who does it associate with? Is it picky?
Yeah, the deep dive showed PBI-143 is largely specific to the human gut. Very human-centric. Its bacterial hosts, mainly species in the bacteroidales order, like Bacteroides, Fecaicola, Parabacteroids, those bacteria can live elsewhere. But PBI-143 itself was hardly detected outside of humans, except notably in places heavily impacted by humans, like sewage. Makes sense. And they also showed really elegantly that it can readily transfer between these different bacterial species within the gut. So it's highly adaptable inside its human host.
Okay, so very human specific, jumps around between our gut bacteria. What about how we get it and its evolution within us? Is it something we pick up later in life, or is it there from the start?
That's another fascinating part. The team found that PBI-143 populations inside an individual are remarkably stable over time, and they're often monoclonal. Monoclonal just means you typically carry only one dominant version, one main strain of it. And this monoclonality seems to get established really early in life. often through vertical transmission passed down from mother to infant. Then it's maintained by something ecologists call priority effects. Basically, the first one to arrive and establish itself makes it really hard for other versions to move in later. It's like first come, first served in the gut ecosystem. The initial resident kind of locks out the competition.
So it's stable, often inherited, a long-term guest. But back to the cryptic part. If it doesn't have obvious beneficial genes, what's it actually doing for its bacterial host? Is it just a freeloader? Or maybe even a burden?
Right, this is where cryptic gets really complicated. And frankly, where the findings challenge the old definitions.
Yeah.
Initially, their lab experiments, the in vitro stuff, showed PBI-143 actually had a small but measurable negative impact on its host bacterium's fitness. It slowed it down a bit, suggesting, yeah, maybe a parasitic role. However, in the complex gut environment, in vivo, its knack for efficiently transferring between different bacteria seems key to its widespread success and persistence. But here's the kicker, the really exciting part. They also found cases where PBI-143 could transiently pick up extra cargo genes. These are genes that could actually benefit the host bacterium, things like toxin-antitoxin systems for stability, or even metabolic enzymes. And this led them to propose this really cool idea. PBI-143 acts as a discretionary parasite.
A discretionary parasite. I love that term. It implies it's not fixed, right? What are the implications of that, this sort of conditional behavior?
It's more than just a label. It's a real shift in thinking.
Yeah.
It forces us to move beyond these rigid boxes we put microbial interactions into. I mean, think about it. How many other things we call parasites might actually be, you know, stealth partners sometimes? Adapting, offering benefits, maybe only when the host is under stress. This fluidity really blurs those classic lines between pure parasitism and clear mutualism. It suggests a much more dynamic, nuanced, maybe even opportunistic role for these mobile elements and how microbes adapt. It's definitely a spectrum, not just black and white.
Fascinating. And what else did they find about its behavior? Anything else surprising?
Yes. Critically important. Its copy number, basically, how many copies in the plasmid exist inside each bacterial cell, goes way up during host stress. They showed this in the lab first by exposing the bacteria to oxygen, which is stressful for many gut anaerobes. But even more compellingly, they looked in humans. They found that PBI-143 copy numbers were, on average, 3.72 times higher in people with inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, compared to healthy controls. That's a direct quantitative link between this tiny plasmid's abundance and a major human inflammatory condition. It suggests responding to, or maybe even involved in, the body's stress state.
Okay, let's recap. We've got this incredibly abundant plasmid. It's human-specific, passed down vertically, responds dynamically to stress like IBD, and acts as this discretionary parasite.
Yeah.
That's a lot for something we barely knew existed. So what does this all mean? For future research, maybe clinical practice, our whole understanding of gut life.
Yeah, connecting it to the bigger picture. Yeah. These findings really force a reevaluation of cryptic plasmids. PBI-143 isn't simple. It's not static. Its ability to pick up and potentially shed beneficial cargo genes, this whole discretionary parasite idea, it suggests a much more adaptive and, frankly, influential role for these elements in microbial communities than we ever really appreciated. They're not just passengers.
And the practical side, beyond the pure science, it sounds like there could be some pretty immediate uses for this discovery, right?
Absolutely. One really straightforward application jumps out. Using it as a super sensitive and specific marker for human fecal contamination. They use qPCR, that's quantitative PCR, a lab technique to precisely measure DNA amounts. They benchmarked PBI-143 against the current gold standard markers used to detect fecal pollution in water, for instance. And PBI-143 was superior. It detected contamination in water and sewage samples where the standard markers actually failed. That's potentially huge for public health, for environmental monitoring worldwide, a better tool.
That is huge for spotting pollution. What about for human health more directly? Does that link with IBD suggest something there?
It raises a really important possibility. It's significant increase in IBD patients. Well, it positions PBI-143 as a potential new biomarker, an unbiased way to assess gut inflammation or maybe general stress levels in the gut. Imagine, you know, a simple test based on this tiny plasmid helping doctors track disease activity in IBD, or maybe see if treatments are working. Its specificity is really promising.
And that discretionary parasite idea, combined with its ability to move genes around, that sounds like it could open doors for therapies, couldn't it?
Exactly. That's a really exciting prospect down the line. Think about it. It replicates well in abundant gut microbes, it's stable when introduced, and it naturally picks up genetic material.
Right.
That makes it almost an ideal candidate for what you might call a natural payload delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
It really opens doors for maybe developing novel targeted therapies for the gut microbiome. You could potentially engineer these plasmids to deliver beneficial genes or maybe drugs directly to specific bacteria in the gut.
Okay, stepping back a bit, from a more philosophical view, this whole deep dive into PBI-143, it seems like it challenges how we even define the core microbiome, doesn't it? Usually we think bacteria, maybe archaea, fungi.
That's a great point. What's fascinating is that, yeah, microbial ecology has traditionally focused on the cellular organisms, bacteria, archaea, sometimes fungi, when defining the core microbiome, you know, the essential, consistently present members. But PBI-143, given its incredible prevalence, its conservancy across diverse human populations, it really meets all the criteria. So this work strongly suggests maybe we need to broaden that definition, explicitly include these highly prevalent mobile genetic elements like PBI-143. It enriches our whole understanding of gut ecology and evolution. It really redefines what core might actually mean. It's not just about the cells.
So what does this all mean for us moving forward? This study's offered incredible insights, but like all good science, it raises more questions too. What are the obvious next steps or limitations to keep in mind?
Well, absolutely. I mean, while this is a landmark discovery, there's still so much to dig into, like understanding the precise functional impact of those cargo genes it sometimes carries. What do they really do? Or how do the different versions of PBI-143 affect host fitness in different bacteria or under different health conditions? That needs much more research. We need to figure out the exact mechanisms, the long-term effects. It feels like the beginning of a whole new chapter, definitely not the end of the story.
Okay, so to wrap it all up, bring it home. PBI-143. It's this incredibly widespread, yet largely overlooked, cryptic plasmid living in the human gut. It acts more like a dynamic discretionary parasite than just a simple freeloader. It gets passed down vertically, it's highly specific to humans, and it dynamically responds to host stress, even correlating with conditions like IBD.
Exactly. And its discovery isn't just academic. It has real practical applications in environmental monitoring, potentially in gut health diagnostics as a new biomarker, and maybe most profoundly, it fundamentally reshapes our understanding of the core human microbiome, revealing this new, abundant, and clearly influential genetic player we didn't see before.
So what does this mean for our future grasp of human biology and health? It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other hidden, tiny genetic players are out there profoundly shaping our health, our environment, just waiting to be discovered right under our noses? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.